Lovely to be here. I've seen people that I've known for many, many years this morning, but not actually been in their company for a long time, so it's just absolutely wonderful to see you, and also to see a few new ones as well. And I've been asked to speak today on Hope's Work, and it's part of your series on the sharing of hope that is in your vision statement here at Alma. And hope is a big subject, isn't it? It's a massive subject. And we remember that in 1 Corinthians 13, it's up there, one of the big three things that abides: faith, hope, and love. Now, I want to say at the very beginning that this is not going to be a theological or academic presentation. Because I think when it comes to the subject of hope, it's something that we have to grasp with our spirits, with our hearts, as well as in our mind. It's got to be something that we experience in our hearts. If ever that we're going to know the life that Jesus talked about, which was life in all its fullness, it's got to be a heart experience. So what I've done is I've included quite a lot of illustrations this morning that will help us in that. Now, hope in Romans 5, which is our passage today, it contains all that we need in order to change our perspective on life. If we can grasp this morning these verses that Paul is bringing to us, we will discover that especially in difficult times, we will have unbelievable help, particularly in the time of suffering. And if we can accept these principles this morning that Paul sets down, that were from his vast experience, we will be equipped not only to live with the present trials that I'm sure that people are going through right now, but also, for some of us, trials that will come in the future. As Paul says in Romans 15, it will be the sort of hope in our life that overflows with radiance and joy. Now, we were going to read our passage, but I think we've already read it, haven't we? So I don't need to say it again, do I? Do you want to hear it again? No. Beautifully read by Sophie. Yeah. Sophia. And what we saw in that passage here is that Paul has introduced this subject of hope by reminding us in verses 1 and 2 that we have been justified by faith, we have peace with God, and we have this hope of glory, which is an eternal hope, which is one for the future. You know, Jesus has died on a cross. The temple curtain has been slashed from top to bottom, and we have access to the Father. Marvelous hope for the future. But then he goes on to talk about a hope that is not only for the future, but is right now. In verse 3, he says those lovely connecting words, but not only that. Not only the future hope, but we have a hope that is now, so that we can rejoice in sufferings. We see that there's a hope here that is inextricably linked with suffering and hope, with trial and heartbreak and all kinds of loss of this life. Now, some commentators think that Paul is answering an unexpressed objection here to the people that were hearing what he was saying. Things like, well, if we have this glorious future, why doesn't God protect us from this suffering? I think I might have been at times where I've actually asked that question. Have you? Things like, if we are the objects of his love and grace, shouldn't we be enjoying a trouble-free life? And we will see how he develops this whole truth of hope. Now, I want to say that with regard to the subject of suffering, it's a very hard thing to preach about, isn't it? I find that for preachers who have to speak about this subject, it's like throwing a boomerang into the congregation, you know? And you give this talk and you're aiming it right at them, and it's got a very strange way of coming straight back and smacking you right in the face, you know. And I felt this when I was studying for this talk this morning, you know, churned up again for me what it means about suffering and hope. I've learned a lot from this study. And one thing that I noticed was, and I have been amazed at, was when you look at the men and women found in the New Testament church, particularly in the early church there, you know, it's incredible, their attitude towards suffering. It's unbelievable. Things like in Acts 5 and 41, the disciples had been hauled up before the Sanhedrin. They'd been beaten and abused, and they'd been told to get on their way and do not mention the name. And it says in this verse, they went on their way from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they had been counted worthy to suffer for his name. What? James, in his letter in chapter 1, verse 2-3, consider it all joy, my brothers, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Paul and Silas in Acts 16 in Philippi, beaten, persecuted, in prison, chained, they are singing and praying. And you think to yourself, they're crazy. The things that they were suffering, the things that they were going through, what is this? But you know what? They knew Jesus. They'd been with Jesus and they'd learned of him. And they were filled with the Holy Spirit. And they were living with a sort of power that was outside of themselves. And I believe that they could not have done it otherwise. So in our passage, verses 3-5, we see that suffering has a purpose. And it triggers a chain reaction that ultimately leads to hope. Hope's work. And chain reaction of hope, there it is, well done you. I think that this is like a row of dominoes, you know? You've got the one here suffering, and one affects the next, until they all go down. You know, you've seen that, haven't you? And the chain reaction of suffering to hope, and the first thing we want to see is suffering produces perseverance. There it is. It's the first link. Suffering brings perseverance, produces perseverance. And perseverance can be described in the Bible as spiritual grit, a sort of mental toughness that is developed through trial. It's like spiritual muscles that we have when we are followers of Jesus. And the word suffering here is also translated as tribulation. And that word means pressure. And, you know, it's a sort of pressure that, you know, the grapes and the olives. I took two groups of people with a colleague on a pilgrimage of the Holy Land. And in Nazareth, they have reproduced a biblical, you know, in the times of Jesus, a village that Nazareth would have looked like. And they have these huge presses. And it was amazing to see the way that the pressure came onto the fruit. And it was three times pressure. The first one was just a gentle one. Then there were, until the most beautiful wine was produced. It was an eye-opener. Now I want to stop here. Because I think this word perseverance and gritting your teeth and your muscles and all of this, you know, is quite harsh, isn't it? It feels quite hard, you know, especially if you're going through a time of trial right now. And in this whole process of making sense of our suffering, we have to say this, that we never deny the pain. We never deny the debilitating nature of it, the relentlessness of it when it goes on and on and on. And the Bible and God never encourage us to deny the pain and the ache and the debilitating nature of it. Later on, I think you just mentioned this verse earlier when you were talking about things that had happened in the church. In Romans 12:15, weep with those who weep, mourn with those who mourn. Trials are hard, and we face up to the fact that sometimes we, when we're going through trials, we need to understand the grief and the pain, particularly of other people. And I love the verses in Hebrews that talks about Jesus. And it says he's a great high priest who is touched with the feeling of all our infirmities. He knows what our suffering is like. And it says this, and he is ready to help us in our time of need. He's there. He never leaves our side. He's watching our back. A few years ago now, I was diagnosed with very serious breast cancer, which demanded radical surgery. And I had experiences then when Jesus met me, I was fearful of my future. And Jesus came and he comforted me and he gave me a different perspective. And from that moment to coming through everything, I felt like I was loved. I felt that that his arms were around me, that he was there supporting me. In time of trial, Jesus is there to support us. So we do not deny the pain. I've been looking fascinating study recently on Psalms of Ascent. You know them, don't you? Psalm 120 to 134. And this is like a little mini psalter in the whole book of Psalms. And it's the songs that the pilgrims sang as they came from four corners of Palestine down to the temple three times a year for the three great feasts, Passover, Pentecost, Tabernacles. Jesus went for those feasts, didn't he? We know that. And they came down and they were singing these psalms as they came, and they had one goal in mind, and that was to get to the temple, to get to the holy place and to the presence of God. They wanted to meet with God. That was their aim, these pilgrims. But it's very interesting when you read the first psalm, 120, the first psalm of these songs that they sang as they went up the 15 steps into the holy place. And it says this. It says, in my distress, I called upon the Lord. He says, woe is me. I'm living in the wilderness of Meshech. I'm having to dwell in the tents of Kedar, this embittered, hostile community that I live in, he said. He said, and I have been there too long. And he's coming down to the temple to meet God, and he's standing on the first step and he's saying, I have to tell you, God, I'm not all right. You know, we don't deny the pain. So our first chain reaction is suffering causes us to persevere. Paul says, we don't develop perseverance and endurance until we have trials. It's all very well for us when our world is spinning beautifully. But when we have trials, there's something different. You know, when our relationships are at breaking point, when we are suffering all kinds of loss, when we've lost our jobs, when we've been diagnosed with a disease that worries us. That's when we need hope. And perseverance is in this chain reaction of hope that's bringing us through. The second thing is perseverance produces character. And the term character means proven character, a character that has been forged out of experience. And in our path of following God, there are going to be some trials in our life that's going to alter the course of our life. We feel sometimes that we're walking through fire. And we all know about the refining process, don't we? We all know about the refiner, how he removes impurities from the gold by turning up the heat. And we ask the question, God, how long is this refining process going on for? The psalmist said that. There's a writer called Ben Mandrell, and he explained it like this. I love this. He said, the refiner knew that the gold was pure when he could see his face in it. The refiner knew that the gold was pure when he could look and see his face in it. We will develop character when we reflect the image of Christ in our lives, even when we go through trials. And I think for me, I was thinking about this, for me the most poignant and inspiring experience of this was when Rob and I went to China. We had been invited to go to Hong Kong, to speak at a conference, and we spent some time also working with Jackie Pullinger in the Wall City. It's not there anymore, but that was an experience and a half, I'll tell you. But we wanted to spend a week at the end of our time in China. We had never been there. And when an organization in Hong Kong knew that we were going to China, they said, oh, lovely. They said, will you take through, you smuggle in, some Bibles and some Christian literature for us? And we said, yeah, absolutely, yeah, bring it on, you know. But the thing is, at that time, China was not as open as it is now, you know, to the West. You know, it was a very short time before the Tiananmen Square massacre. And it was a very tightly closed country. But we said yes, and we went in by train into the south, into Guangzhou. We had been given a list of contacts, and we went in, and we arrived at Guangzhou train station, and it was seething with thousands and thousands of people, two white faces. And we said, we're never going to get through the customs. We're sticking out like sore thumbs. We got through, and we delivered into the south what we had been asked to do. Wonderful, inspiring. But then we moved up to Beijing. And there, we were living in a university hostel, and we were being very closely observed. So much so that one of our guys from the organization had to come, and he had to take us to our meeting place in the middle of the night on bikes through the Chinese countryside. Hilarious. And we arrived at this big, dilapidated building. And we walked in, and there was this group, this underground church of persecuted believers. And did they know trial? Did they know persecution? The guy who ran the church was an eminent surgeon that had been, he'd been sacked from his job. He had no income. He'd living in this dilapidated place, you know. Members of his family and the others there had been murdered and tortured. They had nothing. The only thing that we saw of any value was a picture of Jesus on the wall. And we went in there. Talk about, you know, that reference from Ben Mandrell about God seeing his face in the gold. We saw radiance, we saw brightness, we saw love of God that we have never seen anything. I cried. And we gave them, we opened up our bags and gave them the Bibles and the literature. And they were so ecstatic. They were cutting out the book of Romans. You haven't read Romans? Romans for you. Luke for you. Deuteronomy for you. They were sharing out the Bible with each other and rejoicing. And they had nothing. And they prayed for us. We didn't understand a word, but the Holy Spirit was interpreting it, you know. And we prayed for them. And when I came out of there, I said to Rob, I have never been so humbled. And I came back to England with all my, you know, everything that I had. I thought, my goodness me, I've learned something there. God saw his face in them. They were rejoicing in their suffering. And we learned something about suffering producing character. And for us, as we lean on Jesus in our trials, we learn from his character. We learn from his love and his faithfulness, from his wisdom, from his purpose, from his justice, and from his grace. And our lives become like the seed in the good ground that bore fruit, not like the one that once the trials came, it withered and died. And thirdly, character produces hope. The 19th century American writer Robert Greene Ingersoll said, "Hope is the only bee that makes honey without flowers." Good, isn't it? And verse 5 says in our passage, "And hope does not disappoint us." The word hope, I think, can often be quite confusing in our language, can't it? It can often have a hint of uncertainty about it, you know. Maybe, I hope so. And I'm very loath to use the B word, but March the 29th, everybody, we're hoping that Brexit will get sorted out, that, you know, it will be done and dusted and everybody of every persuasion can be, you know, appeased. We're hoping. Have we any certainty about it? No. The people in Northern Ireland haven't got any certainty. The business community, commerce hasn't got any, you know, farmers, fishermen, us plebs. There's no certainty about Brexit. That's not the sort of certainty that we're talking about here. That's not the sort of hope that God gives us. Hope means unshaken confidence. Unshaken confidence. And that is what we have. Suffering is leading us. Perseverance. Perseverance, character. Character, hope. And hope does not disappoint us. And when we can grasp it, when we can understand it, when we can live by the truth of it, it will change the game we play. We know that he loves us. I have a verse above my desk at home, and I don't know where it's from, but it says this, it's from the Bible. It says, "He is silently planning for us in love." If we can just get grasping that when we're going through a tough time. I think somebody who inspires me most about hope is somebody called Nick Wojcik. Has anybody heard of him? I think we have a picture of him there. He inspires me like no other because he has such tremendous hope in trial. This guy, you can see there very clearly that he has no arms and he has no legs. And at the age of 8, he was born like him. And at the age of 8 years old, he suffered the most horrendous depression. And wouldn't you? What is my life going to be? What am I going to end up like? And so at the age of 10, he ended up attempting to drown himself in the bath. Couldn't go through with it in the end because of the devastation it would have caused his parents. His father was a pastor. And it was as a result of his enormous disability, he had no hope. And then in his teens, he had such an extraordinary encounter with Jesus, where Jesus told him that he had something planned for his life. And this transformational experience with Jesus transformed, it changed his whole life from that moment on. And because of the seeds of hope that Jesus had planted in his heart, he became one of the most fruitful evangelists. And he goes throughout the world preaching the gospel of hope and transformation. And he's a living example of it. And thousands have become Christians as a result of his message. And he has been to the north of India to 30 young students. Sorry. He has been to America in various stages, preaching to 30,000 people, and thousands have become followers of Jesus as a result of it. And he is bringing the mess. He is a messenger of transformation and change and hope against against the odds in people's lives. And he said this. He said, "I was never crippled until I lost hope." There's a verse in Romans 15:13, and it's in the Message. Now, I need to say, the Message is only a paraphrase. It's not a translation, but I sometimes find it really helpful. I have a Bible that's got the NIV, you know, parallel Bible with the Message, so I can keep referring back to the NIV. And this is the verse. I think it's coming up, isn't it? Oh, may the God of green hope fill us up with joy, fill us up with peace, so that your believing lives, filled with the life-giving energy of the Holy Spirit, may brim over with hope. The phrase, green hope, isn't it wonderful? It's vibrant, it's alive. You know, 2 weeks ago when we had that snow day, I went out into the garden to just check that my plants hadn't been all devastated by it. And I saw in this hard, impenetrable patch of soil, this little plant coming up. You know, it was a snowdrop. And it's standing there, you know, with serenity and tenacity against the odds. It was there. Green hope. It's a living hope. It's not false optimism or unrealistic dreams. It's not a figment of our imagination. Because it is anchored in this knowledge, this firm assurance that God is always good. He never changes. He is perfectly and amazingly wise. And most of all, he is totally committed to us, even in our trials. And like that pilgrim in Psalm 84 that was coming down to the temple, he said, my heart and my flesh yearns for the presence of God. My heart and my flesh are crying out for the living God, he says. And that is the place to go. Like those pilgrims came in down and they had one goal in mind, it was to find God. And it goes on in Psalm 84 to say that when they pass through the valley of Baca, the valley of despair and trouble, it says, they make it a place of springs. When they go through the valley, when they pass through, they don't stay there. They pass through the valley of Baca. And as they're going, they're transforming their environment rather than their environment transforming them. And this place of springs speaks to me of John 4, where Jesus said, out of your innermost people will flow rivers of living water. They go on, it says, from strength to strength. And there's another valley in Hosea which fits in nicely. Hosea 2 and 15, it says, I will make the valley of Achor, which is a valley of hardship, into a door of hope. There we have it again. I mentioned earlier in verse 5 that hope does not disappoint us. It's not like the Brexit, I hope so. And the reason for it is because the love of God is poured into our hearts and we know it and we grasp it and we know that he's good. I want to finish with a verse that was so precious to me when I had breast cancer, and I'm finishing with this, you'll be glad to know. Can anything separate me from the love of Christ? Can tribulation, you know, that pressure, can distress or persecution at my friends in China, can famine, nakedness or peril or sword, can cancer separate me from the love of Christ? No. In all these things, in all these trials, I am more than an overcomer because of the love of Christ for me. And so I leave that with you now. Hope will never disappoint you if you are searching for God's presence and knowing the Holy Spirit giving you the power.